Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Sidebar with Cindy.
Every Monday to Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
Welcome to Sidebar Cindy with me, Dr. Cindy Siwe Fansale. And this evening, I'll be chatting about a topic that's very close to my heart. I first came across HIV when I was at medical school, and it was 2001. I was in second year medicine. And at the time, when I look back, I don't think we had any idea what the pandemic was about to do to the country. And this is what we'll be discussing tonight. I'll be chatting about, you know, the evolution of HIV, where we've come as a country, where we are right now, the treatment that is used for HIV, and also some very important hashtags that have come up in the last few years. And the most important hashtag, as far as I'm concerned, is the hashtag U equals U. Undetectable equals untransmittable. But we'll be going through that as the show progresses. Don't forget, our podcasts are up. So you can go to kfm.co.za to listen to the podcasts at FM Rewind. You can also tune in live at kfm.co.za and also on the DSTV audio bouquet on channel 861. So we have this hashtag, U equals U. Undetectable equals untransmittable. So basically what this hashtag means is that if you're living with HIV and you're taking lifelong antiretroviral treatment, so you're on ARVs, if you're taking your medication properly, and this means taking it every single day, and we check the number of HIV copies in your blood, which is what we call the viral load, if your viral load is undetectable, then you can't transmit HIV to your partner if you have sex without a condom, to your baby if you are living with HIV and pregnant, if you are a breastfeeding mother and you're HIV positive and on treatment, you won't be able to infect your baby. And there's a, and that really is why this hashtag means so much to me, because it changes the way that people are living with HIV feel about themselves. And it also changes your ideas around future fertility, unprotected sex, and so on. And this is why I decided to bring this topic to the table so we can have that discussion. I'm joined in studio by a friend of mine, good friend of mine, Dr. Bati Raitawengwa.
Good evening.
And Bati, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
And Ubati works at Kegahle in Alex, and he qualified in 2006. He obtained his medical degree at Medunsa, and he's worked in the NGO and the private sectors. And he also, you know, hosts some a few health features on some radio stations. But the most important thing that's close to his heart is the provision of quality primary health care.
Correct.
But he also has a passion for HIV. And just like me, he believes that, you know, we can curb the rates of new infections by making sure that people know their statuses. So everyone has to test for HIV. And if you're positive, you start treatment. And if you're on treatment, you take it properly and you make sure that you know you keep taking it. So thank you, Bati. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So we'll be taking your calls on 086-000-959. You can SMS us on 36959. And of course on Twitter, the hashtag is Sidebar Cindy, Kaya FM Talk. Thank you, Bati. Thank you for being here, as I said.
Thanks for having me, Sins.
So let's go back a bit to medical school.
All right.
So you came from Zim. You were born in Zimbabwe.
Right, correct.
And then you came to Zimbabwe, to South Africa for medical school.
Yeah, in about, when was that? 1999.
Okay. And yeah. And how was Medunsa?
It was nice. It was nice. It was a little bit of a culture shock at first, but it was...
Culture shock in what sense?
Well, so... Where was I in Zimbabwe? I was sort of from junior school, high school in Zimbabwe, right? Mm-hmm. Where was I junior school? That was Hartman House. And then, you remember Peter House was my high school. And I sort of applied for this university. That's what is it? Medical University of Southern Africa. Came down, first day, we get to Pretoria, I'm thinking, this place must be close, because University of Pretoria is right, yeah. So we jump into the cab, and we're like, take this. The cab driver was laughing at me, he's like, you have no idea. So it's about, 31 kilometers outside of the city, but, you know, you're right next to what's now George Mukhari Hospital,
George
right?
George Mukhari Hospital, yes.
And I won't lie to you, clinically, there's nothing that I didn't encounter in that hospital.
Yeah.
like you actually have got your shoulder to the wheel when you're training in that place. You know, there was obviously for the first couple of years a little bit of language barrier, like I said, culture shock and things like that. But I would not switch my experience. Mm.
And HIV, when did you first start seeing HIV cases?
Like as a clinician or as a person?
As a medical student.
That must have been about 2002.
Okay, and back then, of course, the narrative around HIV was that it was a death sentence,
right?
And there was nothing much we could do.
You had to take so many pills if you really wanted to survive.
Yeah,
I can't remember what the cost of medication was at that time, but we hadn't rolled out ARVs in South Africa. I remember, and we have all of those controversies from those years about
dark time during our
very dark time.
But we've progressed from there, and here we are.
We've come a very long way.
And here we are in 2019.
Correct.
And we have this hashtag U equals U, which has to reach everybody. I think my frustration at the moment, Madzi, is that here's this hashtag which I feel everybody
should be aware of.
And it's taking a while for the authorities, for the powers that be, to get this hashtag rolling. And I know that some of the thinking around it is that if we tell people that this is what can happen concerning U equals U, undetectable equals untransmittable, we are now going to be promoting reckless or careless
behavior. We're not promoting anything. You're empowering people. So you empower people to be able to manage their health by themselves.
Mm.
That's what you do. That's why we say you should know your status. You should test and treat this as soon as you're positive. You're empowering people to manage their lives. And I mean, it's not like, I don't think we have such an irresponsible society that the moment you tell people that U equals U, then everybody's going to go out and be irresponsible. I think by the time somebody's been on treatment for long enough with enough counseling and, you know, I mean, let's be honest, people who are on ARVs and on diabetic medication are the best patients you can get, because they're well aware of what they're doing, especially someone who's, you know, they get really committed to their program. And all it is about empowerment. Give people the knowledge. If it's scientific, if it's medical, if we had the study, if we've done the peer review, if you did everything that's supposed to be done in terms of research, why can you not release the information to the public?
Yeah.
The public should know.
And this is really what happened. I think, you know, the guy that introduces hashtag onto my timeline, Bruce Richmond, he's based in New York and he runs a site called Prevention Access. The first time I came across the hashtag U equals U was on his timeline. Mm-hmm. And I'm eternally grateful for that. And I remember reaching out to him and we started chatting, and he said that, I mean, he's living with HIV. I think he's 51 years old this year. And when he had come across this information, his first thing was, why isn't this information public knowledge? This is now in the United States. And he lobbied and he lobbied and he, you know, made all the right noises until that message was adopted. And at the last AIDS conference in Amsterdam, 2018, this hashtag was adopted by almost every world authority in terms of HIV. Right. HIV, whether it is the CDC, the World Health Organization, the United Nations, UNAIDS, they've put out statements endorsing the principle, the science behind U equals U. That if you're living with HIV, you're on treatment, and you're taking your treatment properly, you can't, you are not infectious. You cannot infect another person or your baby if you're pregnant or breastfeeding with HIV. Mm. And I'm hoping that, you know, with my platforms, whether it's social media or Facebook or Instagram, I'm hoping that the message is reaching people, because we need to get it out there.
Yeah, you just have to keep pumping it. You have to keep pushing it. You have to, like, we have to involve our colleagues. They must involve their patients. And the message will get out there eventually. But, you know, there's always, different people may have questions around it, you know, which maybe we might pay a little bit of devil's advocate to say, okay, fine, you, because you cannot transmit. But what happens when you sleep with somebody who's not, whose viral load is very high? What will happen?
So look, if you think about the concept of PrEP, if you think about pre-exposure prophylaxis, so pre-exposure prophylaxis is when you take medication, so you take antiretroviral medication to protect you from HIV infection. So my thinking in my head as a scientist, as an HIV scientist, is that if you're taking treatment, you are suppressing your viral load, but also in a way you're protecting yourself from what we used to think was reinfection.
Reinfection, yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I've been telling patients, because that question keeps coming up.
Of course.
Oh, okay, I understand that I can't infect anyone. But what if someone hasn't disclosed their status to me and they have a high number of HIV copies in their blood? What happens then? So that's my science around it. And just to talk, I think it's important for the listeners. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Sidebar with Cindy on Kai FM 95.9. And I'm chatting to Dr. Batsirai Tawengwa, who works at Kegahle in Alex. And we're talking about HIV this evening. We'll be taking your calls on 086-000-959. We'll also be fielding your SMSs. And just if I take a look at Twitter and see what's happening on the hashtag Sidebar, I mean, there's one person that says that he is not going to take this risk. Ukaya says, I'm sorry, but I could never take this risk. And that's something that I've come across. And I sit and I argue this with people, and I say to them that...
Which risk exactly?
He's not going to have sexual, unprotected sexual intercourse with someone that's living with HIV and on treatment, even if their viral load is undetectable.
Right.
And that's okay, Kaya. That's your decision to take. But the science is still there. The research has been done, and doesn't change the fact that if you're on treatment and your viral load is undetectable, you are at no risk of infecting someone else. So I get it, and I accept that. And I think a lot of people are feel the same way, and they have reservations about this message being shared, you know. And that's a problem for me, because I feel that if you're planning on having children, how do we expect, if we keep saying that HIV is a chronic condition like any other condition, we expect you to live a full healthy life like everyone else, how do we expect you to have kids if that's your choice, if we're still going to impose the use of condoms on you while you're on treatment, if we know the information that we know?
Well, we have the information on that's the whole purpose of having studies like that, to say, okay, fine. We used to just struggle with CD4 and viral load and everything, and getting adherence. Remember, like, what was it? Adherence counseling. And then you had to start with vitamins first before you. We've come a very long way. So for us to come out of those dark periods in time when you remember with the controversies around rolling out ARVs, to come to this point, I think we've also got a mature patient base. We've got people who came with us from back in those days.
Yeah, as I said, Bruce Richmond.
Exactly.
There's a lot of people on Twitter who've come out to their status
and
they can tell you what we went through. They can tell you how far we've come with everything.
So knowledge is power. You have to empower people with knowledge, and they must make choices.
Yeah, and just to touch on that, Batsi, Batsirai, is that when I first encountered an HIV clinic where we have this clinic and people must start treatment, the waiting list, Ekalafong Hospital in Pretoria, the waiting list to start treatment was 2 years, right? And before you could start treatment, you had to have counseling, you had to see a psychologist, you had to have a treatment buddy, a person that commits to making sure that you are going to start
and
take your treatment. You had to see a dietitian, you had to see a social worker. There were so many hurdles.
Before you could actually get that pill.
Yeah, and people died waiting for medication.
True.
You know, so we can't go back then to back to those days. But we have Unogwazi calling us from Kempton Park. Good evening, Unogwazi, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Van Zyl. How are you? I'm okay. Thank you. My question is, if a person has tested undetectable...
So a person's on treatment and...
Yeah, if a person's on treatment and they've tested undetectable, obviously, and you decide to practice unprotected sex in that you will not be using the condom. And obviously they do the blood test every 6 months as required by their physician or their doctor. How do you know if, for example, the person does a blood test today and then obviously in the next 6 months they have to do it? What if in the 3 months after you've done the blood test, somehow the viral load just shoots up? Isn't that putting the partner at risk somehow? I listen on the radio. I think you do understand my question.
I do. I completely understand, because your question comes up with clinicians all the time. But thank you. I understand exactly what you're saying.
Can I listen on the radio?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So Nogwazi is asking that. Okay, so here I am. I've done my blood test on the 15th of May. I get the results after 2 days, and it says that on the 15th of May, my viral load was undetectable. She wants to know, on the 15th of August, what are the chances that my viral load is still undetectable? So does this U equals U still count 3 months from now, 6 months from now, before my next test? So, yes. That this has come up, and I think
this is where the reinfection debate comes in.
Yes, so this is where I think as clinicians, some clinicians are on one side of the fence, and obviously I'm on the other side of the fence. So if you are taking your treatment every single day, properly at the same time, we can expect that 3 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, your viral load will still be undetectable, right? So that the important thing here is that you need to stick to your medication. If you stop your medication, right, then of course we can expect your viral load to go up.
Well, look, yeah, look, that's correct. But now I also would like to see your partner. I'd like to see you and your partner. If you have partners, try and book different appointment dates.
Why would you want to see everyone's partner but Zee, right?
Look, it helps. You know, and this is the problem, I think, that we have in fighting HIV. A lot of the times we have female patients who adhere so well to the medication, but our brothers are in the background saying, I know my wife's gone, everything is cool.
Well, that's proxy testing. So that's proxy testing. So what Dr. Batsirai Tawengwa has brought up is a principle that a lot of men, some men use. So the partner, the female partner gets tested, say she's pregnant, and she gets tested for HIV. And then she has a baby. And they're going to determine what her status is based on the facts of breastfeeding. So if she chooses to breastfeed, in their minds, she's HIV negative. But if she chooses to formula feed, in their mind, it means that she's HIV positive. Now, that's proxy testing. And proxy testing is not advisable. Every person has to have their own HIV test done. That's the first thing. The second thing, Dr. Batsirai, is that our clinic services are not necessarily male-friendly. Right, there's something that comes up time and again. Right. How are we making it easy for males to come in and test? Am I going to feel comfortable going to clinic there where my wife's best friends work? So if I come in for a test or I come in with an STI, how do I know that by the time my wife gets home from work, she hasn't heard the news that, your partner was at the clinic?
So, and that's why you find people roving a lot. People don't go to clinics in their own neighborhoods. They'll collect medication.
So Rene, as a male, what do you think we can do differently to ensure that more men come into the system? Because it's not that the men don't want to test, but sometimes it's just not feasible. If you're working in an industrial area and the nearest clinic is like 20 kilometers away, you don't have time to take off from work to go and get tested. So what are we doing to make the system easier?
I think you should.
Okay.
It's fine. Yes, I understand what you're saying, that maybe the system is a bit disruptive to people who are seeking to manage their healthcare properly. But this is what I'm saying: empower people to make decisions. And I don't think for a person who can take a Monday off for such and such a thing, you can take one day off to come and see Dr. Cindy to get your viral done, to know your status, to now start managing your health with information that you have, to get educated on it and not talk to your buddies and say, hey, what happened? Say, no, when my wife went, they told her this and this and that. So now, I mean, this is the thing. We just have to encourage people. Well, I think we have to encourage my gender to at least change their health-seeking behavior.
Okay, so
that's what has to happen. I know that we can say clinics are not male-friendly. We can say this and that, but it doesn't matter whether it's in private, in the government clinic, in whatever, males do, in general, are not sort of part of the program.
Okay, so before we go for a break, I just want to ask you, when we come back from the break, the whole issue of you call, so the partner comes in and they've got their partners and you want them to bring each individual partner in for a checkup. 95.9 Kai FM, home of the Afropolitan. More and welcome to the show.
Good evening, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I'm fine, thanks. I'm Maureen from Benoni. I'm a PhD clinician, but I won't mention the name of the clinic.
Okay, ma'am. That's
my worry is we are having a high number of patients who are newly diagnosed with HIV.
Yes.
With all the information that has been sent out, but we're still having the number of people who are getting infected. So now I'm worried. When we're saying we're going to educate our people, give them, empower them so that they can be able to know that when you are on ART, you cannot infect your partner when your viral load is suppressed.
Yes.
Are we going to manage that when we cannot even manage to make the people aware of the danger of unprotected sex? Okay. Because right now, our patients, some of them, they can't even disclose to their partner. They still continue sleeping with their partner, knowing very well you are infected and you don't know the status of your partner. But you can't be brave enough to tell your partner that you are on ART. You keep on sleeping with her. So with the viral load, how are we going to do that? Because we're still going to have the same problem. People who don't want to disclose or who will lie about their viral load.
Okay, no, thank you for that, Sister Maureen. I'm going to ask Dr. Batsi to field that question. I'm in studio with Dr. Batsi Taweengwa, who works at Kegatle. And yeah, let's hear what he has to say about what Sister Maureen has pointed out.
Well, look, I think what she's saying is that regardless of all of our interventions in the past how many years, we still have extremely high infection rates in terms of people, new HIV infections. Look, that's a patient education thing. I mean, for the prevention argument. But we need to also look at what are the drivers of that high infection rate in society. Is it the blessee phenomenon? Is it the sugar daddy phenomenon? Is it high school children who are getting infected by other school kids, or is it in higher risk groups that you're getting these? We have to look at the communities where or the demographic where the infection rates are worst and educate, because for you to reduce transmission rates is an education thing. Education in one thing where if you have a controlled, okay, so let's say you do have a partner who disclosed, that's when you're gonna have your PrEP. But in terms of general casual sex lifestyle, people hooking up, we educate enough people, the transmission rates will go down if people condomize or if people manage their health properly.
And before we went for the break, you spoke about partner tracing.
Partners, yeah. Yeah, I did.
So let me hear about that.
Well, you wanna look, you're not treating, I mean, it takes two, you know, two or more to get things done in the bedroom, shall we say. You're not just treating this individual, you wanna treat them and anybody else who they've exposed either the STI or the virus to. Mm-hmm. You need to have some way of asking them to bring their partner in. And if they're like, "Doc, I've got multiple partners," that's not my business. My business is to make sure that everybody who's been exposed and is unaware that they're exposed or needs for them to get some prophylaxis right now does come in and we intervene in time.
And so this is where you'd ask the person to bring their partners in on different days?
If he wants to. I mean, if people go to hotels on different days for certain reasons and the concierge says nothing. The concierge didn't take an oath. I took an oath. Mm. So I think I can keep, you know, I can sort of keep a straight face enough, but at least if I can get to talk to my patient and educate him on the risks of multiple sexual partners, that's another thing. But if he's going to bring 10 partners in, I know I've intervened in 10 lives. Rather than him bringing one and we're trying to be socially, politically correct or something, bring them in, please. 10 as they are. I'll treat the disease.
That's Dr. Batsi Taweengwa. And you listen to Sidebar with Cindy on KFM 95.9. So we have a special guest online. His name is Devalt Mathieu. And I met him last week at the Northwest University. I'd gone to give a talk to the students about HIV and sex and pre-exposure prophylaxis and U equals U. And Devalt also gave a talk as a student telling us about his journey with pre-exposure prophylaxis. So we have him online. And I'm happy that we could get hold of him. Good evening, Devalt, and thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Dr. Cindy. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thank you so much for coming onto the show. And I've just given
it's no problem.
And I've just given an introduction on how we met at the event at the Northwest University. Devalt, I want you to tell us where did you hear about pre-exposure prophylaxis, right? The tablet that you can take to protect you from HIV infection. And what made you decide to start taking it?
Okay, so basically the first time I get were exposed to the concept of PrEP, it was on a dating platform where people put on their statuses and saying, well, they are negative, but they are using PrEP. And then it was quite curious for me to get to know what is this PrEP thing people are talking about and what is it about. And I did a bit of research about it, and then I saw what it doing and how can you use it and everything. And the first one of the biggest struggles were to get it, because it is, as a student and your budget is tight, it is quite expensive, like I discussed last time at the university.
Yes.
And then there's a lot of organizations that is giving it out free, and then the government as well, if you are qualified in certain risk groups. So then I decided maybe I should try to find out more. And what then happened is I met a friend, he's now a friend of mine, and he is using PrEP, and I asked him about it, and he's also a pharmacist and everything. And at the end of the day, he encouraged me as a student, because in a student environment, sex is one of the things students do in their free time.
Yes.
And I live by the thing about prevention is better than dealing with the circumstances afterwards.
Yes.
The whole thing about genezing is better as voorkoming is better as genezing. That's thing in Afrikaans.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, that is why I decided to start using PrEP. And he said, if I'm on a medical scheme, I can most probably get PrEP free. And that is how I obtained my PrEP.
And so the perception, dear Walt, about PrEP, that if you're on PrEP, you want to be promiscuous. Did that cross your mind? Have you come across such thinking?
Yes, I did. Well, it actually, the first time it was with my doctor. He was telling me, so is that basically why you want to use it?
So this is now, you've gone to your medical doctor. You are asking to be registered on the pre-exposure prophylaxis program of your medical aid.
Which is a good thing.
Yes.
Which is a good thing. And then the doctor says that you want to start PrEP because you want to sleep around.
Basically, that is what he said to me. So it was quite shocking for me. And that is one of the biggest reasons why I was wanting to do activist work on PrEP. Because just now on Twitter, I saw this whole tendency about people thinking only gay guys use PrEP, and PrEP is just like an excuse for doing bareback and everything.
Yes.
But it's not that. It's your life. It's your choice. So why do people need to make an issue about this? That is what I want to say to people. You can be gay, you can be straight, you can be whatever you want. It's about living a better life.
Mm. Well, thank you so much, Devil. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your experiences. And I hope to see more of your work on Twitter. I'm glad that you're on Twitter now. And I'll make sure that everyone gets your handle so you can keep talking us through this important message of pre-exposure prophylaxis.
Thank you, Dr. Cindy. And I am seeing out for working in the future with you.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy.
So it's just gone 7:30 on Sidebar with Cindy on Kaya FM 95.9. I'm still in studio with Dr. Batsirai Tawengwa, who works at Kegahle in Alex. And we're discussing HIV. We're discussing U equals U, undetectable equals untransmittable. I've just had a chat with Udeh Walt about PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, a tablet you can take to protect you from HIV. And I also have a query from Twitter where Umasi Chaba has asked if I could explain how saliva does not transmit HIV. So this is something that comes up quite a bit on social media about oral sex. Can you get HIV from oral sex?
Wait, before we go there, I just want to address what
Dear Walt
said. Mm. I mean, if you really read between the lines, that's still stigma. That's still coming back to the point that certain people have subjective views about HIV because they do have a subconscious bias or whatever. It's the stigma phenomenon that surrounds this disease.
Mm.
I mean, if it was a diabetic thing, no one would say, oh, so you're trying to go and have more sweet. You know what I'm saying? Because it's a sexually transmitted disease, because it's an HIV positive patient, even though he's doing something so proper, like he's trying to manage his lifestyle, he's trying to make sure that he doesn't get a new transmitter, and that's management. That's a good thing to do.
Being real, because he's a student, he knows the setting, and he knows what students get up to.
But because maybe we haven't been educated or sensitized, or we actually have maybe a lot of doctors just actually haven't looked at HIV as a phenomenon globally. I mean, can you really? You're going to tell someone? You are trying to. I'm here for PrEP, bro.
I did some training on PrEP, Dr. Tawengwa, for medical doctors. And I must tell you, you know, I do quite a bit of teaching. That is probably the hardest audience I've had to teach about PrEP and men who have sex with men and all of those concepts.
Mm.
Because they sat there staring at me as if I was speaking Greek. But eventually, I guess, you know, my take-home message for them at the end of the day was, we're here to save lives and we're here to make people's lives better.
Mm.
So we can't judge. We leave our judgments at home and you do what you have to do because you took an oath and that's what you have to do.
Yeah, but stigma's not that easy to get rid of.
well, education.
Education, yeah, and re-exposure. Education over and over again.
And that's why we do the work that we do. So back to Umas Chaba's tweet about saliva being a mode of transmission of HIV. So the amount of HIV in saliva, so every bodily fluid contains some virus, but there isn't enough virus in HIV in saliva for transmission to happen. So this is why kissing and oral sex are not modes of transmission.
What about mouth sores?
For HIV.
What about if you have like a cold sore?
Even if you have a cold sore, even if you have a cut in your mouth, saliva itself is potent. So the virus wouldn't survive for very long under those circumstances. But there's not enough of it for transmission to occur.
What if you just got your tooth pulled and you're bleeding?
Okay, who would want to be kissing someone to be kissing someone under those circumstances?
Listen, there's some people out there. They do, you know, things happen.
Okay, so if you've just had a tooth extracted and your mouth is bleeding, there's a cotton wool plugged in there. Of course, we don't want you to be kissing or having oral sex. So stay, you know, keep yourself to yourself up until the wound is closed. You've done your salt washes. You finish your course of antibiotics and you've healed.
Fair enough.
So we have Untate Puso on the line, and he's calling us from South Hills. Good evening, Tate.
Well, it's my land too, Samak. Well, I'm not well. Because you are talking in these terms, like I've never been medical. I don't want to be medical because, my bless you, my. I couldn't get into that one deep. You think? Does the message get to our people?
It doesn't, Tate Puso, because this is the work that I do. So the challenge, the challenge is not that the message is not going out there. The challenge is that not enough of us nurses or medical doctors are sharing this message.
In the layman's language, I think I'm very literate, very literate. But sometimes, until we work at the prophet, like she say, I go to mix.
Okay.
You know, if you can break it down to the
okay.
Because can it? No. It's not a criticism.
No, Dade, it's a very valid point because we were actually arguing this yesterday on one of my social media platforms around how. Are all messages appropriate for Africa? And my initial response was one of what does that woman mean by asking that question?
Sometimes that's what I experienced myself in my professional life. I would say things that need to fly over the people's heads. And you find people doing the same thing that you say they shouldn't do, and so I can say let me cut to the chase.
Okay,
you know, I think I can say it was a great as well.
Okay,
so. because I don't understand why we should have this incidence of HIV this day and age.
Tate Puso, we are sexual beings. Sex is part of life.
Of course it is. I'm not discounting that at all. But what I'm saying is that given all the factors that we have, do we really get through to people who hear about from the...
We do. Okay. So we'll definitely have this topic again. But let me explain... Prophylaxis. So prophylaxis is treatment that is taken to prevent something. So in the context of HIV, when I speak about PrEP, when I say pre-exposure prophylaxis, that young man that called in is taking a tablet once a day, every day, to protect himself from contracting HIV. Mm-hmm. And that is what pre-exposure prophylaxis is.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a student. He understands that he's in an environment where the sex can happen at any time. It's not always protected sex because that's reality, right? So he understands the reality of a setting, and he's now taking precautions. So to answer your question about why do we still have high transmission rates in this day and age, we are not always upfront or realistic about our situation.
True story.
Okay, so Dr. Batsi would like to comment it. But thank you so much, Tate Puso. I'll keep all your comments in mind.
I mean, how many patients have you had who have said, I'm not ready to test today, Cindy? It doesn't change the disease process that's happening in your body. But people get to a point where they think that they're not ready to know their status for one or two or three or four reasons. And I mean, that's the first step of you taking PrEP. If you're going to take PrEP, you want to know your status first. Mm. And then if you know that you're negative and you want to avoid transmission, you're going to take the pill.
Okay,
but how many people do you know that actually come in and you suggest to them, you offer, let's say for a VMMC program, and you offer, say, listen, before we circumcise, we do offer free HIV testing. Would you like to test? And like, doc, I'm not ready.
Testing is scary, Dr. Batsirai. But we'll take a call from Utembi. Utembi's calling us from Tembisa. Utembi, welcome to Sidewalk Cindy on Kaya FM 95.9.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're good, thank
all right,
you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay, I'm good. Okay, I'm a clinician by right. profession.
Yes.
And then some things when a patient tells you about, you take it as from a patient until you have to personally encounter it.
Yes.
So right now I'm in a process, like I'm single, trying to get into a relationship. So obviously before you get into so many things, the first thing you do is you go and test
yes.
with your partner, right? So now I'm having a problem whereby what if I meet a discordant partner?
Mm-hmm. Discordance meaning you are HIV positive and he's negative or vice versa. What do you mean by discordant?
Okay. Let's take it like he is a carrier, he is positive, but whenever you do a rapid test or an ELISA test, they both come back negative.
Okay.
I think it's talking about natural control.
So you've brought up something and I want us to talk about it now before you finish your train of thought. So we don't have something like an HIV carrier. So a person is either living with HIV, they're either HIV positive or they're HIV negative. That's the first thing. So before we take your calls, Michael is here and he's coming on at 8 with the Law Report.
Hi, Cindy. Tonight on the Law Report, we're going to have part 2 of a conversation we had a few weeks ago, and we're talking about family homes. And just to make, just to sort of demonstrate how big a deal this is, there's actually a position paper that is written by an organization called probono.org mm-hmm. in conjunction with University of Birmingham. And they're talking about family homes and how it affects South Africa today. So that's what we're talking about today. And as always, because this is obviously a question that and a subject that affects a lot of Afropolitans, especially in the Gauteng area.
Yeah.
So I'll be looking forward to the calls. And as always, Afropolitans can call us.
Thank you. Looking forward to the show. So back to Tembi. Tembi she called in from Tembisa and she's still on the line. So Tembi, so I was just explaining before we went for the break that so the concept of carrier doesn't exist. So
not
you're either HIV positive or you're HIV negative. Okay.
Can I explain to you where I come from?
Yes, So I've just explained that. So now we can continue with your question.
Okay, I had a couple who came to test at the
yes.
clinic. Mm. The lady tested positive, the guy tested negative.
Yes.
They say they've been having unprotected sex for the past 3 years or so.
Yes.
That's how back they've been living together. So we thought that they've not been using protection for 3 years, and the lady is positive, the guy is negative. Then we decided to do a backup, like another test, which we did ELISA.
ELISA, okay.
Yeah, ELISA came back negative.
For the partner?
Yes, for the partner.
And the lady still keeps testing positive?
Positive. And the partner, this guy says, before this relationship, he had another relationship which was similar. The first time they met, they went testing, both tested negative. Later on, the lady tested positive.
Okay.
And then the lady, apparently, she got pregnant during labor. She couldn't make it. So now she had this second girlfriend.
Okay.
Which the same thing is happening again.
Okay. So now I'm just going to go in a bit deeper in terms of the transmission of HIV. So the factors that affect whether HIV gets transmitted or not. The first thing is the viral load. How much HIV is in the person's system? So the lower the viral load, the smaller the risk of HIV transmission. So there's a threshold. There's a certain figure below which even if you aren't on treatment, but if your viral load is lower than that number, you won't be able to transmit. The chances of you transmitting the virus are very small. That's the first thing. The second thing is the presence of sexually transmitted infections. We know that HIV loves open, moist wounds. So if there are no STIs, the risk of transmission again is very small. And the last thing is circumcision. So circumcision, we know that over a 2-year period, if you're circumcised, 60% decreased risk of HIV transmission. So when I have couples like you know what you've just described, the thing is to go through each of the risk factors of transmission to check if the couple, you know, tested together before they engaged in unprotected sex. And to also ask how many times they're actually having sex. So it's one thing to be with someone for 3 years and to say that you're having sex, but how often are they exposed to each other's genital fluids? So, I hope that answers your question.
So when you're checking for the predisposing factors, then now how do you check for VL when the patient actually tests negative?
No. So the viral load of the positive partner.
Of the positive.
Yeah, because remember, the negative partner is negative, and if they keep testing negative, that partner is negative, and that's done. So we are now, so we are now asking the positive partner, when did you start treatment? Are you currently on treatment? What is your latest viral load? And obviously, if the patient's on treatment and they're still having sex, and the viral load is undetectable, there is no transmission happening there.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll get you.
Okay, but I'll get you details from the producer, and I'll get in touch with you after the show.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you for the call. We have Tabang calling us from Davidson. Tabang, thank you for holding and welcome to Sidebar Cindy.
So, welcome to Davidson. I'm keeping my head in the but I'm starting to work on my about the communication with you now. So, Last Monday, I'm not sure I'm a result from, but no. I'm sure I'm going to some food clinic, maybe a clinic.
A pharmacy, yeah, or you land the medication.
Yes.
Yeah.
So my point is, one, if you have a sex leak, you have a condom, you have a problem, you got to affect something with it.
Gag, because okay, so when I babatabang baze baghambi se eclipse, it's because opuza medication yakho kahle. So the government of the Department of Health started a system where you start your medication and then after 1 year they check how well you're doing. If your viral load is undetectable, they then transfer you to a club. So every 3 months or every 4 months you know a group of you goes to the clinic and you go straight to fetch your medication and you go home. And if you're doing very well on that, they then send you to fetch your medication at Clicks or at Dis-Chem. So the government has got a contract with some of the retail pharmacies where you can go and fetch your medications. So it's only patients
and some private practices.
And some private practices. Mm-hmm. So we're making it convenient. There's no need for you to keep going into clinics and sitting in the long queue. So we're basically decanting the patients. And it's only patients who are virally suppressed, whose viral loads are undetectable, who can do that. Mm-hmm. So Babatabang, keep it up. You put a little medication yako, and you won't infect your girlfriend if anything happens to the condom.
Thank you very much.
Okay, keep it up.
Wonderful.
God bless.
Thank you.
Bye.
We also have Faith who's calling us from Discovery. Thank you so much for calling, Faith.
Good evening. Yes, I just heard the young man that phoned in and spoke about the PrEP.
Yes.
And I also heard the doctor saying that it doesn't matter how many partners you have, you can bring them in on different occasions.
Yes.
I hear a lot of talk where we sort of promote this PrEP thing.
Yes.
But very little comes through about reinfection. Because now I also heard someone talking, saying that students can use this because it sort of allows them to, and I'm not adding this, allows them to finish their studies and not get infected. But what if it becomes a habit in a young person's life,
okay,
where they have multiple partners, they keep using, keep getting this PrEP medication post-exposure or pre-exposure, whatever it is.
Yes.
But very little, I didn't hear yourself or the doctor talking about the risk that people are at in terms of the PrEP itself building up a resistance.
Okay. So that's
and I think it's very important that you talk about that so that people are aware that this is not a lifestyle. They cannot make their lives to become like this where they're dependent on PrEP because it will fail them at some point. And when they really need these things to work for them, it won't work for them because by then it would have built up a resistance.
Okay, are we talking about PEP or PREP?
Okay.
Both. Okay. PrEP. But I mean, we need to talk about whatever medication it is, building up a resistance.
That's what I'm saying.
If someone is on ARV treatment and they're also not taking it well, it will also build up a resistance. I think in a program like this, it's important that we cover that, we talk about that, whether it's pre-exposure prophylaxis or whether it is PrEP, as you call it. need to talk about resistance so that people are informed and take informed decisions.
Okay, so the first thing, Faith, is that you can only get resistance. So the resistance is when the HIV is no longer responding to antiretroviral treatment. That only happens in the presence of HIV. So you can't get resistance in a person who's taking treatment for PrEP or for PEP. You can't, because there is no virus to get resistant to the medication.
Mm. Yes, so, but what I'm saying, when the person keeps, let's say someone buys it, it now becomes, they buy a whole box full of it.
Mm.
It at some point, it will build up a resistance. It's like antibiotics. If you antibiotics, then without you finish, you don't finish the course.
Remember, we're not talking about a patient who was on treatment and defaulted. We're talking about somebody who's on the PrEP program or PEP, and before you start those programs, you have to be tested and you have to be and you should be negative. Resistance only happens when the virus is in your body and you expose it to the drugs, and it gets an opportunity to get stronger. That's when resistance happens. But if the virus is not in your body, there can be no resistance formed because you're HIV negative.
Yeah.
So, but I'm talking about the PrEP itself. Is it a tablet?
It is a tablet. And
so if they continue taking it, what? Obviously they get used to the body. No, and when the body really needs it,
it's not like that. It's not like that for HIV, Faith. It's like that. So if you're HIV positive and you're in treatment and you keep stopping and starting medication, then you can build resistance.
Yeah.
That's a different story. But in this, in the case of PrEP, which is pre-exposure, and PEP, which is post-exposure. Because you're HIV negative, right? So each time you come and we test you for HIV, you're still negative, and then we'll put you back on PrEP or we'll give you PEP if you need it. You can't build resistance because there is no HIV in your system.
Mm.
I still don't understand.
Okay, so I'll get your number from the producer, and I'll be in touch with you after the show.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
So Matthew, that's something that comes up quite a lot. I think a lot of the resistance around pre-exposure prophylaxis and post-exposure prophylaxis amongst the clinicians is because of the misconception that you can build resistance to the medication and it stops working eventually. And if you do test positive and you need treatment, it won't work. But that's a misconception.
It's not factual at all. And I think it also falls in with the stigma argument that we have our own personal opinions and ideas that are not necessarily true. So I might have ideas about my patient who I think is going to be promiscuous. I don't think those ideas should be part of treatment management. I should be able to treat them as best I can. And if I don't know how to treat them, I think there's a hotline that you can phone. There's a website. There's all types of opportunities for us to get proper protocols from I think even the clinician society. There are tools and resources. If you're a clinician who has a patient in front of you and you're not sure what to do, you can actually, who can we contact since? We can contact you. We can contact the clinician society. I think everybody's got a hotline now. Most of the NGOs have one.
Yeah.
And you can simply say, look, just hold on a minute. I want to find out what I could do next. Because this thing about resistance, the whole thing is that we're talking about one patient who is negative, who is preventing the actual transmission of HIV into their body.
Mm.
We're not talking about a patient who defaults for 3 months, goes somewhere and says, I was traveling, comes back, starts again on the regimen, defaults again because so-and-so said they must stop taking treatment, gets on second line. That's when resistance forms, when somebody is not adherent to the medication.
Okay, so we have a tweet from Sir Pax, and he says that, I don't think it's a good idea to tell people this information, and it's for their own sake. We are so irresponsible, to say the least, and that's his opinion. We have Dawn on line one. She's our last caller before we wrap up. Good evening, Dawn, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Dr. Cindy. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the other doctor's name.
Dr. Batsirai.
Dr. Batsirai. So I think what you are doing is really, really important in terms of educating us on the progress of HIV, because a lot of people still don't understand. I mean, even now, some of the things that you're talking about are only learned about this year. and I think it's really useful that you teach about it. I think we need more platforms, too, and from government, schools, and other platforms that are going to educate us further, because as you can tell from the previous call, there's a lot that we don't understand about it, and it almost reminds me of when I was young and I was being taught about HIV and AIDS, and I thought that people who have lots of sex make AIDS. Mm-hmm. And I think we've reached that place where the information is so complex for us that we actually don't understand how did we get here so soon, because just a decade ago AIDS was killing us.
Mm.
So I think it's really, really important to just, especially with the health department, to find opportunities to educate us. I don't agree with the tweet that says it's irresponsible for people. If people know, they can use the information responsibly.
Correct.
No, yeah, thank you so much for that.
I don't think information changes your personality. If you're irresponsible, you're irresponsible.
Mm.
But we have an obligation to educate our patients. We do.
But see, so where can we find you?
You can find me in Wynberg at Kerkatle, which is 89 Watt Avenue, Yarona Building. Basically, if you're going to Alexander and you find Sasa, I'm right next door to Sasa.
No, but thank you so much for being a guest on my show. I really enjoyed chatting to you, and I love the work that you're doing.
Thanks for having me. Thank you very much.
That you're doing. And yeah, this was an interesting show. I think from the calls that I fielded, there's still a lot of work for me to
do. There's a lot more to do. Yeah.
And I think we'll have this kind of show once every so often, just to update people on what's been happening, and also just to engage. I think we are here to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always learning from the tweets, from the calls, from the engagement, and I also have a lot to teach, and this is why we'll keep doing what we're doing on Kaya FM on Sidebar with Cindy.
Sidebar with Cindy.
Every Monday to Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Visit kayafm.co.za for more.